Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
I'm heading along to the Serbia match tomorrow night. First time I get to see Stephen Kenny's Ireland in the flesh. You know, see what all the fuss is about. Obviously, I'm bringing along a Stephen Kenny cardboard cutout. Does any self-respecting football fan attend a match these days without one? The only thing I need to decide is what message to scrawl over Stephen Kenny's big cardboard head in big black marker. Is it going to be legend, give him time, or loser, get him out? I'm hoping, Ken, you can help me judge the mood, having been at the Aviva Stadium for the Azerbaijan game. How are you?
Very well, Owen. How are you?
Hi, Murph. How are you?
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
Welcome, everyone, to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Brilliant show lined up for you today with two of the biggest hitters in Irish football punditry, Richie Sadler and Damien Delaney, together again, as they were after another fairly grim occasion, the home defeat by Luxembourg.
Wow, we sure know how to pick them, don't we?
We really do. Yeah, we'll get them a good one eventually, but, you know, what can you do? Depending whose account you read, Ken, Stephen Kenny's team were either politely applauded off the pitch yesterday or mercilessly booed for their shambolic performance. So which was it? You were there.
They were booed and then applauded by the schizophrenic crowd. Now, I think it was probably different people in the crowd doing the final whistle. You could hear boos and then a sort of a defiant, swelling applause. That rose up from the silent majority, the applauding majority, I would say, Owen. A somber yet dignified round of applause for the Irish players. It may simply have been that some of the players started to kind of walk around and actually applaud the crowd, and the crowd was kind of applauding them back.
Or were the crowd responding to the boos? Was that also the issue?
I don't think it happened quickly enough. Actually, the crowd were responding to the players coming to sort of applaud them. That was it. Like, I mean, the boos though were not like. I've heard real angry boos at the Aviva before, and this was sort of half-hearted boos from some people. And I was kind of thinking, what are you even booing? Like.
A terrible result. You're booing a terrible result, Ken.
The result isn't that terrible, Kieran. I mean, by what standard do you apply?
4 minutes before the end, we were about to join a long list of Azerbaijan away victories that included... Well, there were only two away victories in their entire history, Liechtenstein and San Marino.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what they were booing.
Well, I still don't... So they were booing something that didn't happen.
They were booing something that very nearly happened,
It's
also a 1-1 draw that's still a terrible result. And it's a terrible result, Ken. Come on. Like, on the back of 3 defeats in this group, a home draw against Azerbaijan, even forgetting for a moment the fact that the equaliser arrived in the 86th minute, is a terrible, terrible result.
I honestly don't know where you get your arrogance from. Like, where do you get this entitlement from? You know what I mean? Like, have you watched too many Galway Mayo matches? Like, what is it about you that you think that you're just entitled to beat anybody, no matter who? Not anybody,
just Azerbaijan and a select list of other European countries in qualifying.
Including the aforementioned Liechtenstein and San Marino.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I feel as though... I mean, when was the last time you actually went to see an Ireland game, Murph? When was the last time you went to see the boys in green?
I literally can't remember.
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised. It doesn't sound to me like you can remember seeing many Ireland matches over the last 10 years.
I've seen them all.
You sound like a guy who hasn't sat through too many Ireland matches. I've seen them all.
Northern Ireland nil. I sat through it. I was there. It goes down in history as the worst sporting event ever played on these islands. Yeah. There is absolutely no doubt about that.
And I sat through the whole thing.
I didn't even boo them. I didn't even boo them at the end.
Murph, once you did boo them.
I didn't even.
Oh, Murph, sorry. If you wouldn't mind, your colleague Ken is trying to shout you down here. So
and you're now telling me so the last Ireland match you went to was Ireland nil,
no,
Northern Ireland nil, or Northern did they beat us? Or was
I don't
Iceland?
Know where it exists.
Ireland
to me,
nil, Iceland one. I mean, that was a good one.
It exists to me in a place beyond time. I don't know. I couldn't even put a decade on when that game happened. It immediately popped out of focus in my brain, and it has remained there ever since.
The Northern Ireland game.
Yes.
Well, I think it was 2017. But, you know, Northern Ireland nil. Iceland beat us 1-0 that year as well at home. Do you know how many people live in Iceland, Murph?
Oh, not many. But, I mean, they were in the Euros.
Didn't we have this conversation after the Luxembourg game? How many bad teams do we have to get... Sorry, Luxembourg on the bad side. How many teams do we have to get bad results against for us to not hear about previous bad results?
Luxembourg are a bad side. You know, come on. Like, it's okay to get beaten by Portugal at home and Serbia at home, maybe, at a push. Like, we used to be disappointed when teams like Serbia came and beat us at home, and now it's turned into, you know, actually, there's like this frantic look after we draw with some terrible team to see another semi-decent result that this team got in the last 10 years so that we can say, well, actually, Azerbaijan have been trending in the right direction.
You just think Azerbaijan, because it's a multi-syllable country from a long way away, you just think that they're automatically hopeless. Dude, Azerbaijan is twice the size of Ireland in population terms. This is actually not as bad a result as losing to Iceland was.
I'm trying to point out to you
that you've never had it so good.
Okay, so
you've never had it so good, but you don't know it.
Ken, how about this, right? How about this? How about you draw up a list of countries we're allowed lose to at home, and then you send me the remaining teams in Europe and the world that we're then allowed to get pissed off about when we don't beat them at home. Like, and I look forward to us you know, drawing up friendly fixtures against, you know, Papua New Guinea or whoever is left on this list that we're actually allowed to be upset about when we don't win. Like, the fact of the matter is, I remember a lot of Euros and a lot of World Cups. I don't remember Azerbaijan, you know, struggling bravely out of Group H of, you know, USA, well, probably wasn't even a country in USA 94. You know, like, don't tell me that I should be expecting Ireland to draw at home to Azerbaijan, because no one's going to believe you, Ken.
Well,
come
like,
on.
Literally, Ciarán, you have not been paying attention to Ireland for the last decade. If you're surprised by that result, and if you consider that result to be some kind of a scandal, oh my God, I can't believe how bad that result is. You don't know what you're talking about.
You're saying the last decade, okay, Ken. You're saying last decade, but what about it's more the last?
And by the way, we competed in two European championships in the last 10 years.
I think we're starting to judge these poor results against previous poor results under the current management, and saying, well, of course you can't expect to win these games. We lost at home to Luxembourg, and the next time we have a bad result against a team that we're ranked a good bit higher than, well, of course we drew against Azerbaijan. So, you know, these results, surely there's never a stage where this kind of campaign we've had so far outside of the Portugal game is deemed, ah, it's grand.
Ken, if I'd offered you three defeats and a home draw against Azerbaijan before the group started, would you have snapped my hand off?
I don't believe in the philosophy of I'll snap your hand off if you offer me an imaginary prospect before something that happens that has no bearing on the imaginary promise that you've just made. I just think it's a dumb way to conduct discourse.
Yes, and yet that's what we've been doing to explain away all these terrible defeats and even just the not great draws.
So you're a guy who sits in the stand with a foam thumbs down, waving the thumbs down and shouting boo, boo. What do you think went wrong?
Ken.
No, go on. You've seen a lot of it. It's not just, I'm sure you're not just the guy who wanders in, glances at the scoreboard and then goes, boo! I'm sure it's based on something more than simply what the scoreboard says. So please, tell me what was such a disgrace.
Okay, well, first start, he picked the wrong team. He changed formation. The formation obviously didn't work. The second the goal went in, the entire team fell apart mentally. For all of the talk of, if we're going to give Stephen Kenny time, that's fine if he's playing the right stuff. The second half was direct from every Ireland manager from the last 30 years. Get the ball to not very talented wingers to sling in terrible crosses and hope that someone gets ahead in it. And finally, that happened. But that's okay. We're moving in the right direction. I mean, I'm not even here. Like, I'm not going to be in the crowd booing Stephen Kenny. Like, I absolutely have given Stephen Kenny as much time as possible. But at the end of the day, Ken, like, don't come on here and say that Azerbaijan at home, a home draw against Azerbaijan, is a good result or something to be proud of. Or, of course, that's just what we expect.
The result, on, like, the result isn't good. The result,
of course,
is not,
and the result wasn't good on Wednesday night. But that's,
are
that's
you somebody fine. Who looks at this? Are you somebody who just takes your message from the scoreboard? Have you ever seen that movie They Live?
No, and I'm not someone that takes the
you're a guy who
from the scoreboard,
in the movie the guy
fine,
Rowdy Roddy Piper puts on a pair of sunglasses and he sees ads. He suddenly sees that all of the ads and billboards and stuff like this around actually have messages like obey and serve and whatnot like this. And then he takes the glass off and it just says like an ad for Campbell cigarettes or something. Then he puts it back on and it says obey again. And he, you know, I'm thinking, okay, at least this guy has to put on a pair of special sunglasses to get this. Whereas you just look at a scoreboard and you see the word boo and you just boo. You don't take any account. You don't look at the performance. You don't look
at what actually happened in the game. Are you telling me that the performance was good enough on Saturday? Forget about the result. Are you telling me the performance was good enough? Are you telling me the team selection was good enough?
I'm telling you that games are close. Games are tight. We're a country that is in a situation where a lot of our matches are really close. All our matches have been actually really close. And if you look at it, each match turns on tiny details, little pieces of luck.
Every time. We haven't won one game in any of that time competitively.
Imagine tossing a coin and it comes up heads four times in a row. Has that ever happened in history? Well, yeah, it has. Yeah, I mean, you can look at what's happened in these games and you can see how in each game Ireland have actually been unlucky. If Ireland had been averagely lucky in these games, we would have had a very different story.
Ken, no, and I absolutely appreciate that. But at the same time, when you say games turn on tiny details...
Hold on a second.
If you continue to say games turn on tiny details, that's fine. But the tiny details you're talking about are not things beyond our control. Like, the tiny details you're talking about is failure to challenge players on the edge of the area, particularly when we've all seen that the guy who has the ball at his feet is a really, really good striker of the ball. Like, that's a tiny detail, but that's not luck. That's just a thing that we failed to do in the same way that we failed to do it against Luxembourg at home in a game that we lost in this World Cup, in this World Cup qualifying group. Like, the chances we miss are still chances we miss. We miss as a team and as a management. At some stage, you have to take responsibility for the fact that these things keep happening, as opposed to say, "Well, we're unlucky. We go again." And like, that's just the reality of the situation.
The reality of the situation is we're unlucky. We go again. Well, what are you talking about? Take responsibility. Is taking responsibility booing? Is that what you're saying? Is that that's your prescription?
No. The team takes responsibility for what the team does. The manager takes responsibility for what the manager does, and the fans can do whatever the hell they like.
If the referee the other night had given a penalty to Paulinho or to Aaron Connolly for getting jumped on by Paulinho, and Ireland had gone 2-0 up and probably would have won this game, you would have your big foam index finger in the air.
Did you hear me on Thursday, Ken? I didn't come on here and say, well, listen, at the end of the day, Ireland lost the game, so what can you do? The fact of the matter was, the performance was excellent. It was an excellent performance. I came on and said on Thursday that Ireland were really good.
Between these, the difference.
There's very little difference being beaten by Portugal away.
Matt Doherty said after the game, about the Portugal game, everyone's confidence should be sky high going into the game. And this is the disappointment. Anytime we put together a creditable performance and one that has us thinking positively about things, as happened away to Serbia, we come back, and in both cases, in this instance, we come back home and with fans even cheering us on this time, and produce a performance that's not good enough.
But there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference between these games. There's a huge difference. Portugal are a team that's going to attack you with like seven players. Every time they lost the ball, it was Paulinho and two central defenders, and we had space to attack into. That's why... That in a way suited us. The fact that we were able
to defend. Cool. So the only good performance we had is because the other team totally underestimated. Okay, that's definitely in our favor.
That's not what I'm saying. I don't like you're the one who is saying, the performance against Portugal was amazing and against Azerbaijan was a disaster based on the results, based on you think that Portugal are good. You think that Portugal are good and you think Azerbaijan are no good, but you don't take account of the different types of teams they are, the different types of games they are, and how that
Ken, how about this, right? We were really, really good in the first 15 minutes against Azerbaijan because they gave Matt Doherty a ton of space down our right-hand side. After 15 minutes, Azerbaijan saw this, they changed it, and we fell apart. Nothing good happened for us after the first 15 minutes because of one simple switch that Azerbaijan made to make sure that Matt Doherty wasn't free in 15 yards of space and was overlapping constantly and getting into their box. Like, after that happened, after that one switch, we fell apart. So, I mean, at some stage, like, you can say the tiny details. You can say we're unlucky. But at the end of the day, that switch ended the game for us. We didn't do anything good after that. So, I mean, like, whose fault is that?
Well, we had like, numerous chances. You know, there was numerous moments in the game.
But at what stage could you say that we created something really good after the first 15 minutes where we got on the ball in midfield, we played through Azerbaijan, we created a really good chance. The only good chance we had were balls.
These things didn't really happen, but like, are you hallucinating? Like, when was the last time in the last 10 years that happened? I mean, we've won matches and failed to do any of the things that you're talking about. So why are you suddenly so like, I can hear like how angry you are, I can hear how triggered you are. What is it about this? Why has this suddenly got your goat? Like, I don't get it. You've forgotten the last 5 years. You've forgotten the last 5 days.
Ken, what happened over the last 10 years was exactly what we expected to happen. All the time. Like, it was like there was never any sign of any improvement whatsoever. Like, I'm allowed hope that Ireland improve. Like, we saw Ireland play really, really well on Wednesday night. You've said that there are reasons why. Of course, Ireland obviously will play brilliantly against Portugal away from home. That's fine, but. Like,
I'm not saying they'll obviously play differently against Portugal. I'm saying that the games are requiring different things.
But that type of you did say that the Portugal type of game is the type of game Stephen Kenny wants. This thing where we're counter-attacking, we're backs against the wall. But that goes against everything we know about Stephen Kenny.
When did I say it's the type of game he wants? I'm saying
that's what you said in your previous answer. I jotted it down so I could come back to it and make the point that the games that we're supposed to dominate possession in is what Stephen Kenny is supposed to want, and we're supposed to be constructive with that possession and create chances and score goals, and it has not been happening.
Perhaps I didn't express my point correctly, because I don't think that's what I said. What I'm saying is that these are two completely different games. Kieran is saying one performance was good and one performance was bad based on the results and his estimation of the opposition. He's not taking into account what the team is required to do in each game, and how it's possible, I think, sometimes to look better in a game like the one against Portugal simply because you're given more space to attack.
But we're supposed to look good with possession. That was supposed to be the whole Stephen Kenny ethos. He told us that in the Liberty Hall a couple of years ago, that he wants to dominate the ball. He wants to have more possession. He wants to be constructive with it. And Azerbaijan said, okay, off you go.
And it didn't go. It didn't go as well. I mean, I think if you want to look at XG. Look at the XG. Kieran, look at the XG.
Okay.
What's the XG? What was the XG?
It's 2.28 versus, or 2.05 to 0.28 or something.
Okay.
And tremendous. But all I'm saying, Ken, is, like, we're allowed hope for improvement. Like, I'm angry because
this is what annoys me about it. It's like a couple of tiny things go the other way and suddenly your reaction is totally different. But what actually has happened is more or less the same. Adam Eda's header, like, glances the other side of the post, or he misses it and one of the three guys behind him is able to bundle it in. Or, like, the guy doesn't score from, 28 yards. Like, I mean, the goal he scored.
Ken,
it's literally the best goal I've seen. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, and that completely conditions your reaction. Instead, you're, like, angry and you're saying people are okay to boo. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Hold on a second. I actually never, ever said that people are okay to boo. And
it's a bad result. You know, they're booing a bad result. That's what you said. Even though it's actually not really that bad a result in the context of, like, our last 5 years of results.
Ken,
we've beaten four teams in 5 years.
Yeah. But
we've beaten Gibraltar. We've beaten Gibraltar, Georgia, Wales, who were missing their two best players on the day. And who's the other team? Moldova. So where does your sense of entitlement come from?
The argument is from qualifying for two of the last three European championships. Jesus, like, come on. Like, your argument is so self-defeating. Your argument is so unbelievably self-defeating. It's like, the longer this goes on, when does it honestly stop? Like, when we say, well, we've only won five games. Like, we're allowed to get progressively more and more pissed off that we haven't won games. Like, the whole idea of this is that we care and that we want the team to win. And, like, we're allowed to be angry when they don't beat teams that are, like, not right, they're ranked way below us.
But what makes you think that anger is a useful response? It's just an idiotic response. This is like a knee jerk. It's like, you know, kill the pig, cut his throat, spill his blood. It's a Stone Age scapegoating response.
There have been 15 games. We've won one game, and that was against Andorra. So you can't say it's an knee-jerk as though there's just been one bad result and suddenly everyone's gone crazy.
Things in every game go one...
Things in every game, Ken, come on. Like, this is not how sport works. It's not how sport works.
This literally is how sport works. And this is why you shouldn't get distracted by details.
Good teams, over the course of 15 games, I think you can get a pretty good average indication of whether a team is going in the right direction or not. That's... Surely you can agree on that. 15
guys.
Games is enough. Is more than enough time.
I don't see the evaluation of Ken. the performances. I just think it's scoreboard journalism.
Hey Ken, Murph.
It's Stone Age
Ken.
Stuff that I've
Ken.
Heard from you this morning.
Ken, Murph. I'm looking at my Zoom right, and it actually says Damien Delaney has entered the waiting room. Right, so Murph, I'm gonna have to sit you down for a little while.
I think we'll that's fair.
We'll get Damien and Richie in, and we'll bring you back after everyone gets a nice deep breath after that.
Obviously, there's one piece in the Irish Times, Ken's piece today.
Oh, no. But it's unbelievable. I mean, don't go there. This is nonsense. This is much more better English than Ken uses. What does the word totalizing mean? Get a dictionary if you need one. Ken says he doesn't know what it means. This is nonsense. So he's praising Guardiola for doing something that he doesn't himself understand. I like Ken. He's a fine writer.
Can we ring Ken there? Here, can I give you his number? Ring Ken.
Ask him, has he found the word decodify in the dictionaries? He said he hadn't found it so far.
I
don't want to be unfair to him.
The last time we had Richie and Damien Delaney on together was after the 1-0 home defeat to Luxembourg. This time it's a 1-1 home draw against Azerbaijan. We'll try to give you guys a more joyous gig at some stage, but, you know, we can only work with the results that we're given. How are you, Richie?
How are you, lad? You well?
Not too bad. Damien, how are things?
All good, lads. All good.
You guys won't have heard this yet, but there's been a heated debate already between Ken and Richie about where this result
Kieran.
Stands. Ken and Kieran, I should say, about... how we should be feeling about results like this. Is it essentially a terrible, terrible result, Richie, as Murph says? Or Ken's side of things is that, look, I mean, we shouldn't feel entitled to beat these teams and we haven't beaten this particular team.
Well, it feels different to how it felt Thursday morning discussing the Portugal game, I'll say that, which is obviously odd given that this is our first World Cup qualifying point. Of this campaign, we got nothing on Wednesday night. I think pre-match there were some hopeful moments. The fans are back. The anthem was great. Stephen Kenny looked happy. The game started brightly, but there are things to speak positively about here. Like, there were plenty of chances created. We got a late equaliser, which in normal circumstances it'd be a cause for celebration. But I said Thursday morning that it was really, really important we followed up what we did in Portugal with at least one win in these two games, and we haven't had it yet. And we'll pick apart the performance now or the selection or how the game went, but overall I kind of came away from Saturday feeling pretty deflated, to be honest.
Damien, how are you feeling about things?
Well, both of the lads' arguments there, I can picture how it went, and both of them are right. It's essentially how you view the world, you know, glass half full or glass half empty type of situation. But I understand certain people prioritise results over everything, and certain people are willing to give the progress kind of route a chance. But I think the answer falls somewhere in the middle. It doesn't have to be either or. You know, it's not Giovanni Trapattoni or Stephen Kenny. I think there has to be something in the middle in so far as the performances. We have to see progress. That was promised. We not just promised for our own kind of good, but for the good of the Irish football. We need to move forward and we need to try a different way. But equally, you don't just get to have carte blanche for two, maybe qualifying in rounds of qualifying for the World Cup in Qatar and then the Euros after that. So he has to try and find a way to marry up both. And at the moment, I think he's getting it wrong.
Getting it wrong. How? I mean, specifically, if we look at Saturday night's game, what did he get wrong?
Well, conceding goals. And I think I was driving home last night and I was thinking long and hard about it. And I think an angle that's been overlooked is we are shipping goals and we're not keeping clean sheets. Everybody is talking about us not scoring, which is true, but we're also not keeping clean sheets. So he has to find a way to make us more solid that at least, I mean, we've had four clean sheets in his 15 games, which I don't think is good enough when you look back over the caliber of the opposition that we've played. Okay, we played England and got beat heavily, but nearly all the other games, with the exception of Portugal recently, obviously, were teams in and around us, the likes of Finland and those. And I think that we should be able to keep clean sheets when you look at the caliber of defenders that we have. So that has to be his first thing, to stop goals going in, because at least then, you know, a Shane Duffy header is enough to win 1-0. And there, I'm talking, there's the progress now that we're keeping clean sheets. We're playing progressive football. We can see what he's trying to do, but we're also getting results. And 1 point from the group that we're in, considering that we've already played Azerbaijan and Luxembourg at home, is borderline, if not tipping over to the unacceptable column for me.
What do you think has gone wrong, Richie? Would you agree with that it's a defensive rather than an attacking problem?
I suppose if we talk about Saturday for a moment, I think Stephen's decision saying defence, I thought maybe what was the changes he had to make? O'Shea was unavailable, so he had the choice of sticking with Andrew in centre-half or putting Coleman back in there, or put Coleman right wing back, or keep Doherty there and keep McLean on the bench. So I think in terms of his selection of players, I don't think I'd fault it. I think one of the things I would look at from his team on Saturday, and these are just discussion points. I don't think these are crucial blows in either column for the keep Stephen, get rid of Stephen wider discussion, which seems to follow every single game. Every single game Stephen's been manager of, it's like a referendum on, is he the right man that we need to stick to no matter what happens, or is the wrong fella that we need to cut him loose? So forget the bigger question for a moment. But I think on this performance on Saturday, I think we look pretty open in midfield. Again, I suppose this adds to Damien's point on how we were defensively. I think two central midfielders, particularly two the relatively inexperienced midfielders in Cullum and Malumbi, I think at times they looked overstretched and a bit too open and a bit too vulnerable. In front of those were three front players who have even less experience and no competitive goals between them. So there was lots of things about the performance on Saturday which, start with the positives here. We started brightly. There was two or three opportunities in and around the Azerbaijani box in the first 10 minutes. We played with a bit of intensity. Now, it kind of just dropped off from that. And we kind of didn't really recover it before half time. And I've heard a lot of people give the most optimistic view of the game, which is said, in second half, we kept way more of the ball. We created load of chances, we loads of balls into the box. We really put it up to them. I think Stephen Kenny after the game said we should have or could have won 3 or 4-1. But you can't really understand the second half without acknowledging that Azerbaijan were 1-0 up at this point. This is a team that had lost 8 of their last away games in a row. Their approach now was be defence focused, concede possession of football in most opportunities. So sit back and put it up to us to say, okay, lads, break us down. So the game went the way that Azerbaijan wanted it to go in the second half. And we just didn't have enough moments of quality to finish the chances we created. And we created some. And I've heard a lot of people be dismissive of the fact that a lot of the chances we created were from crosses. And supposedly Stephen wants us to get away from crosses. I think there's still a place for crosses in international football. It's how we got our goal. It's how Ronaldo scored his 2 goals the other night. But I think overall, I don't think we deserved to win the way the overall flow of the game went. And it is a point of obvious disappointment, which we'll all agree on, that we're saying that after a game at home against Azerbaijan. But it's also a point of concern that we're saying the kind of same things again and again and again, that we're picking moments of positivity in matches, but overall there's a trend which is still we can't win. And we're trying to get hope for the fact that at times we're playing well against the bigger teams. Probably our best performances were Slovakia, maybe Serbia away, Portugal away. And we're getting hope from the fact that against the big teams, we're failing, but we're playing well. But then we're playing against the low teams and we're either failing to beat them or they're beating us. So we've now become a team that just doesn't win matches. And that's an obvious fact, which as long as that's on the table, then the smaller discussion points around how we are defensively, or if two should be in the middle or three in the middle, or if we should have two up front or three up front, they become less and less important.
Mm. The one worrying thing I have to say I thought about, I mean, there was a few things that obviously didn't go right on pitch. You know, you look at the system, some of the performances, that, you know, and we can get into all that. But one thing that I didn't like that I heard from Stephen Kenny after the game was his description of the goal scored by Azerbaijan as a killer blow for us. I thought, how can that be a killer blow? It's not a good thing to concede a goal like the last kick of the first half. Obviously, that's not good. But a killer blow is if a goal is scored at the last kick of the second half. It just seemed as though that sort of reflected a kind of a pessimism about our chances that I think you could see in the way the team got more and more flustered as the second half went on. I mean, what do you think of that, Damien?
Yeah, I agree. I actually picked up on the exact same thing that you pick up on. I when I was watching the interview, I thought the exact same thing, and I thought that the term hammer blow would have been more apt or suitable. But I kind of dismissed it then as quickly as I thought it, because I thought it was just a poor choice of words. But maybe you do have a point there, Ken, that maybe it is a reflection of his kind of innermost thoughts.
But you need to react better. Like, I mean, this is the thing. Like, you can't sort of obviously it changes the pattern of the game in the second half, as Richie's been saying. You know, Azerbaijan can now be even more conservative. You know, they know that Ireland have to go looking for the goal, and that kind of plays into their game plan, and that's obviously true. I mean, but you know, Kenny's like, it changed the narrative is another thing that he said. But like, they have to stop thinking about the narrative. I mean, they know that there's going to be some fans in the stadium who are going to boo them at the end, you know, if they don't win. They know that there's a percentage of the Ireland fans who have that sort of entitlement about the team's performances, even though they've beaten barely anybody in the last 5 years. But you still got to say, look, there's plenty of time left for us to win this game. We've got to keep sort of applying our method.
Yeah, I agree. I know, you know, the second half was akin to like a Mick McCarthy or a Martin O'Neill type performance, where we went behind and we just piled on the pressure. And there's nothing wrong with that. I agree with Richie. You know, you kind of, they drop off. You can't just keep retaining possession and picking and waiting for the gaps to appear, because they might not. So they just kind of went with the old fashioned, get it in the box and let's play percentages. And sooner or later, something will fall for us. And I don't think there's anything really wrong with that. I probably would like to have seen it maybe with 15, 20 minutes to go and not straight away. But I think that's just part of the players' makeup, that they were 1-0 down to Azerbaijan. They recognised how badly this must look. So they just thought, we need to up the ante here. And they just went full court press. And they got probably a deserved equaliser in the end. But, you know, the goal just before half-time, can anyone say that they didn't deserve it, Azerbaijan? I think they did. I think with the exception of the first, I mean, again, in Stephen's interview, he said we had a good 15, 20 minutes. We didn't. It was about 7 or 8 where we started really brightly. And again, you know, there was nothing intricate about it. It was just sheer volume of work ethic and just applying pressure. We had a couple of half chances. I know Seamus had a good one on his left foot. But then once the game settled, you know, Garayev at the base of the midfield, and I'm going to keep beating this drum. I know some people out there will be shouting, going, shapes don't matter, they're unimportant. And I think they do. I place a huge, huge, huge emphasis on it. I don't like it. I've gone on record of saying that before. I think that we're not good enough to play with two central midfield players in a world where everybody's playing three, because you will just never really get a foothold in the game unless you're two. The only team that does it is Chelsea, but they've got Kante, Kovacic, or Jorginho and Kovacic, or, you know, I remember Conte used to play it as well when Chelsea won the league, and they had Fabregas playing in there. You know, they are real quality players who can maintain and retain possession under the most intense pressure and play their way out of it. We don't have that. So I think we have to get the numbers in there, because...
Damien, on that point, I think that's interesting, but is it a question of the quality of the players? Or, because, I mean, the other teams, like I can think of England, say England played the system in the final of the Euros, so obviously they didn't win the game. Germany played it a couple of times in the Euros, most spectacularly when they beat Portugal. But the thing I noticed about them is that Rice and Phillips were the midfielders for England, Gundogan and Kroos were the midfielders for Germany. And it's not so much that they're better than the Irish players, though maybe they are, it's that I didn't see any of them doing what Malumbi was doing, which is like running ahead of the ball and sort of they play really conservatively. Like, do you think that we could play that shape if we had two central midfielders who midfielders in our squad, but midfielders who are prepared to sort of hold their ground?
Yeah, and I think that's when you play with Rice and Phillips, you play with two out and out sixes. But the reason it worked against Portugal is that the primary role of that shape was defensive, because the wing backs were almost back as a back five, the wide players tucked in McGrath, Jamie McGrath and Connolly tucked in to make, then you almost had four central midfield players, if you understand what I mean. When the two wide players tuck in, you almost have a box between the two number sixes and the two number eights. So it is a very, very solid foundation, and it gives you a great platform to break from. But if you look against Azerbaijan, when you have a little bit of the ball, 50-50, which is what the split was at halftime, as opposed to 80-20 or whatever it was, 70-30 against Portugal, the wide players now are pushing on to join in. They're not really primarily thinking we're going to be defenders and counter-attack. The wing-backs now are 15 yards further up the pitch. And that's that space that Richie was talking about, unfortunately. And now you do have to have some seriously good midfield players. It's very, very difficult. You reference England in the Euros there. That was one of the most conservative tournaments from anybody. When England played Germany, they played with seven defenders and three attackers. They played with Rice and Phillips in a flat-back five, and they just had Kane, Sterling and Mount, I think, was the other one. So, I mean, England prioritised being defensively solid, and that's the way the Euros went. Now, it's very hard for us to do that against an Azerbaijan, because they might not come out. You know, we're at home against a team ranked far lower than us in the world. It's up to us to take the initiative. And I don't believe that playing two central midfield players gives you the upper hand in midfield, because I am still a firm believer that midfield is where the games are won and lost. You have to gain the upper hand in midfield. Very, very rarely will you see teams win games if they've been cleaned out in midfield. And I don't blame the two young lads. They're very, very inexperienced. They just needed another body in there to help them.
The other thing about Richie is that if you see, say we'll take Chelsea as the team that plays this system and has had a lot of success with it. The other thing you notice about the way they play the system is that the players on either side of the centre forward are not really forwards. Or like, so with Chelsea, it's usually Mount. Say if you look at the Champions League final, it was Mason Mount and Kai Havertz on either side of Timo Werner they had then. They've got obviously Lukaku now. But it strikes me that those players, the two kind of number 10s you might say in the system, are almost midfielders, or like they're halfway between midfielders and attackers, whereas the forward line that we picked against Azerbaijan were really all forwards. I mean, is this a case of a manager sort of just getting it wrong?
First of all, I do get the need to discuss formations, but I do think it's we're stretching it a little bit. I know the point you're making, Ken, but I don't think Mount, Lukaku and Havertz should be comparable to Connolly, Ida and Parrott. But
you've got to have a link. You've got to have a link between your attack and midfield. What we had was three guys standing in a line, and sort of there's no way to pass the ball to them. Like it seemed like if they're going to do that, what's the point of playing this system?
I get it, yeah. But first of all, why I'm saying you can't compare is because you can, even just by putting Lukaku on the pitch, it gives you so many different options of the kind of ball to play to him, or the impact it's going to have on the defence and the positions they take up to try and counter the threat that Lukaku poses. You won't get the same ripple effect from putting Adam Ida on the pitch. And likewise, Connolly and Parrott. compared to Mount and Havertz and what they can do. So there's, even by selecting those players, you're going to pose so many different questions in the mind of the defenders in the way that our lads don't. But you're also right to say that I think putting those three, I just think because of where they are in their career also, like they're 19, 20 and 21. And I kept hearing this phrase all weekend, you know, those three can still play in under 21s. Well, okay, great. That's an observation and that's true. But I don't know if that's a particularly positive thing or not in the way that a lot of people were saying it, because there's loads of inexperience, no experience of competitive goals. And I don't know, did we need all three of them?
Like, well, what's the alternative?
Put an extra player in the middle of the park. So you have three central midfielders, anyone, Hourihan, Hendrick, McGrath, anyone at all. Because first of all, numerically, I think you need a third in the central midfield, as Damien has said, rather than three up front. Because I think we were going to be up against the team that were going to sit back. Now, we didn't hope that they would be the one to score first. But as soon as they did score first, the game was just going to be about them staying back and denying all the space. So I don't think the performance Parrott gave, I think himself and Ida, which is not unique to Ida and Parrott here, but players that don't have a huge amount of playing experience together, they may have all linked up in the 21s at times, but Parrott and Ida looked kind of to be covering the same ground. They're looking to make similar kind of runs. And you could, to give them all a break, you could say, well, with more time together, with more work on the training ground, we'd give them time to develop as players, to score a goal and to build in confidence, to understand the role, to fit the shirt, all those abstract phrases. But it once again, a performance we're looking back on, it didn't feel like this worked. And we're in this discussion then, like you said, Ken, is it because of the quality of player we've got? So that it actually doesn't matter who goes where, it's just the quality is inferior. Is it the selection of the manager in terms of the numbers that he's putting either in midfield or up front? So is it on him? But also, is it the level of performance as well? Because there was moments of sloppiness. Daryl Horgan is one that springs to mind, but he wasn't the only one. There was just moments of kind of sloppiness on the ball as well, which obviously goes beyond ability as a player or the position you're given. It's kind of like your attention to detail or your concentration in moments where it matters. And I think the real moments of quality we would be hoping in the moment of importance, particularly in the second half, just was frustratingly lacking.
Can I just jump in on and kind of piggyback what Richie's saying there? So like, you have Troy Parrott, right, who is a technical player, very, very good, works in tight spaces, picks up nice pockets, commits people and can score a goal. We put him on the right wing, right side of three, okay? He's got a lot of attributes. One of the attributes he doesn't have is he's not the most mobile of individuals. Right. So if you're going to play him on the right side of three up front, then you need to have 70% of the ball. You have to dominate the ball. Otherwise, he's going to end up chasing fullbacks. He's going to end up tracking back. And he's not mobile enough to do that. You want to get him on the edge of your box, on the edge of their box, sorry, and get him the ball in around his feet and make things happen. That's his primary role as a player. Playing him on the right side of three up front, when possession stats at halftime were 50-50, is not going to work for him. If you're going to do that, you want to put him at the point. So you've got two sitters in Cullen and Malumbi and get him in the number 10. I always think you're good players, you're technical players, you want him on the ball as often as possible. And sticking him on the right wing isn't good enough. You got to get him in the middle of the park and get him on the ball and let him, give him an opportunity to do stuff, unless you're going to dominate the ball. And we didn't dominate the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can you praise Stephen Kenny for at least changing things at halftime, Richie? I mean, he took Connolly off after a couple of disappointing games in a row.
Yeah, I think that was the right call to take Connolly off. I don't think he was having a good game. Stephen came out and I think defended him again after the game. I think there's a question mark again on the team selection. Maybe we'll jump ahead to the Serbia game. Stephen has said before.
Well, because I think it's important. I mean, Serbia's tomorrow night. These games come so fast. I don't know what it's like for the players because there's no time for us. You're reacting to one and the other one's the next day. So with these three qualifiers in a row. So yeah, how are you looking at
it? Yeah, actually, Adam Eda was asked that, but I think by maybe Tony O'Donoghue after the game, he says, you're going to have three games in 6 days. That sounds like a lot. And Adam gave the answer that I think most footballers give. You know, it's what we do. We're hungry. We're fit to play. We're raring to go. Can't wait for it. But Stephen gave an answer which was probably more interesting and thought out before this round of games, which he's learned from previous double headers or triple headers, that the conditioning becomes an issue for some lads in ways that it doesn't for others. Sometimes it's down to their age or their bodies, but often it's down to the amount of regular first team football they're getting or at what point they are in terms of recovering from injuries or carrying injuries or whatever. So I don't know. And we know Seamus Coleman is out. I don't know if he's going to rule out certain players because they've played a lot of football already in those two games, or whether he has a clean slate and he has them all to choose from. But there will be, we'll jump on the team selection tomorrow night as soon as it's given and we'll ask questions. But I think Stephen's going to be privy to information that we're not, which is that to some lads, they'll be able to play, they're fit, they're injury free, but because of their fatigue or energy levels or whatever, they're not going to be able to deliver a level of performance that is going to be needed. So those players will be kept on the bench in the way that Callum Robinson was for the game on Saturday. Callum apparently said to Stephen beforehand, "I don't feel up to starting. I can do a shift coming on in the second half, but not to start." So those kind of calls will have to be made internally.
I got to say, Damien, I'm a bit worried about the Serbia game. I mean, they put four past Luxembourg. Mitrovic got a couple of goals. He scored a couple against us the last time. They're good at nutting the ball into the net, which
I've never seen a team make so many chances with headers from 6 yards. It was unbelievable how many of them they set up in their last game.
They're an incredibly offensive team. I mean, they do leave the back door open a little bit, as we saw in the game out there. But their manager just has them passing forward, running forward, and getting to the byline. I mean, the goals the other night, the quality crosses that came in were absolutely impressive in the extreme. I mean, they were fantastic. But, I mean, Milinkovic-Savic's pass for the first goal, I mean, you know, you know it's a good pass when you're watching it on TV from the wide angle, and you didn't see that pass. I mean, for him to see that at pitch level, you know, that was such a good pass. And I do worry for us, yeah, because the brand of football that they play is very, very high tempo, very, very fast. They're in a great vein of form. And I do worry for us that we're at the end of a very, very tough period of the two games, and now another one again on Tuesday night. You know, there's a little bit of doom and gloom, probably a bit harsh, but, you know, we're not exactly, you know, full of energy. So I do think it could be a very, very tough night for us. I hope it's not. I hope maybe Serbia or maybe not quite as good as they can be. And I hope that we have a great night, or we have a system that helps us to, similar to what we did against Portugal, defend solid, deny space and counterattack. That would be the way I would see the game going. But I would be pretty concerned playing Serbia. Absolutely.
Does it actually matter, though? Does results matter here, Richie? I mean, what are you looking for from this? It doesn't actually matter for our seeding, just on that. I mean, the seeding apparently, this is for the Euros, will be decided on the basis of the Nations League next year. So it doesn't actually...
It definitely matters.
So
here's the thing. It doesn't in terms of World Cup qualifying. It doesn't if you're looking at this game as an example to develop, whether it's Aaron Connolly or Adam Eder or Cullen or Malumbi, or get McGrath back in the pitch or get young Andrew back in the pitch or Bazunu to try and get a clean sheet. If you're looking at individual opportunities to develop players, great. But and I'm not dismissing those things because they're relevant, particularly where we are in terms of Irish football and the makeup of the players available to the senior manager, right? We know we're in a period where we're trying to work out who we are, who we're going to rely on, and where we're going. However, if we all start to say things like the results don't matter, then it's that. I remember there was a discussion maybe 10, 12 years ago. I think it was around that time when Don Givens was the under 21 manager. And the results were awful. They were just awful. We were winning games against the lower teams.
He was under 21 manager for years, though, wasn't he?
For ages. And if you read it, record, record was awful. But
10 years. 2000 to 2010, yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, and I think he ended with a run of 11 competitive games without a win. So he left. You can make all the points I just made and elaborate on them indefinitely when you're talking about under 21 football or the under 23 development league in England or under 18s, because you're talking about those things, the development of players and establishing, get them to learn about the game and blah, blah, blah. But this is senior football, where it's great that teams go out with the idea to maybe entertain or to be pleasing in the eye, to play young players, to play with pride, get a connection between the fans and the players, connection between the players and one another, that we all feel joy and hopeful afterwards. But and they get more and more kind of abstract kind of things, but the fundamental that we can't get away from is, like, it's about results. And that sounds too one-dimensional to some people. It sounds too negative or dinosaur-like, because it gives the impression that you don't understand the nuances of formations and tactics and youth development and establishing a squad or blah, blah, blah. But you get fucking nowhere if you don't get results at senior level. You never get to a tournament. You just can't. So you can't say a statement like, results don't matter.
But we've had a series of crushingly conservative managers who have prioritised results over everything else. And the outcome of that has been things like Wes Hoolihan had to wait until his 30th birthday to win his second cap. Probably the most creative, the most gifted creative attacking player we've produced in the last, you know, since Damien Duff. And he was 30 by the time he won cap number two, because the manager thought that, well, he's a bit small, and after all, we want to win games. The next manager thought that, well, you know, I don't want to try and rush Jack Grealish into declaring. And anyway, the Scotland game might be too big for him. And it's a kind of a crazy idea to think that I'd bring Declan Rice off the bench against Moldova to get him in the team. And we see where the softly approach got us there. He said with Moldova, you know, when we're desperate to win games, to bring in a guy like that just to get a captain seems crazy. Well, okay, well, I'm not sure how good that decision looks in hindsight. The next manager brought Glenn Whelan back because he wanted to win games. And it's a culmination of, like, policies like this over years and years and years that's left us in this position where we've got, like, such a terrible team. And if this manager now is playing 20-year-olds, it's because this previous policy has failed and we have to try something else. And now that this isn't getting immediate results, you get some people booing and thinking that's fine, and other people saying, look, it's about results. So we're basically saying, let's come back, Giovanni Trapattoni, all is forgiven.
Nobody's saying that, Kit. Nobody's saying that at all. And it doesn't have to be either or in the extreme, you know. And I think that's what you're trying to make it, that it is either Giovanni Trapattoni, results over everything, aesthetics go out the window, or it's Stephen Kenny, results go out the window and we want to look pretty. There's a middle ground and there's a little bit of both that you can fit in. You can do both, absolutely. You can be defensively solid and still play reasonably good football. You can still create chances and keep the back door shut. I mean, it can't be that. It can't be. If and listen, I think Stephen deserves to finish out the qualifying campaign. But if you said to me that, look, I think we need to move on from Stephen, it doesn't mean that we go and phone Giovanni Trapattoni and get him back and say, well, that was a failed experiment. We're just not good enough. Stephen's not the only person that can play football. Stephen is playing football, but I believe he's getting the balance wrong. We're not winning enough. So if you do decide, if, and I'm not saying we should at all, I think Stephen deserves to see it out and we'll assess it at the end of the qualifying campaign. But if somebody said, look, or the FEI decided it's time to move on from Stephen, you don't then just go back to Giovanni Trapattoni. There's somebody else out there that can do this better than what Stephen done.
Exactly. Like framing the discussion as one of two polar positions here. It's just wrong. And I know it's become that a little way.
Well, that's how it was for the first 20 minutes of this podcast before you guys stepped in, Rich.
I know. And it's like when Stephen took the job, do you ever travel in a car with toddlers, right? And they've no concept of the length of the journey they're undertaking. And it's, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I think collectively, we've all become like that in our approach to this issue. As soon as Stephen Kenny got the job, first game, was it Slovakia? Oh, I think we've seen enough. I think we've enough to this fella. The way we played, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then we'd have a bad few games in the Nations League and, oh, we've seen enough. And after every game, it's, what have we seen? Have we seen enough? Are we there yet? Like, the decision doesn't have to be made today. It didn't need to be made after Saturday. It won't be made tomorrow night after the game. Exactly like Damien said, step back from this big question and just allow Stephen to do the job he was given. So go to the end of the campaign and then we'll sit back and reflect on where we are.
But even then, the end of the campaign isn't... The end of the campaign isn't enough time. I mean, I look at a good comparison, I think, is Michael O'Neill, when he took over at Northern Ireland. And if I look at his results in his first campaign, I see a 1-1 draw at home to Luxembourg, a 1-1 draw at home to Azerbaijan, a defeat away to Luxembourg, a defeat away to Azerbaijan. And isn't it lucky that they didn't decide, well, look, Michael, that's not good enough. We are Northern Ireland. We should be beating teams like Azerbaijan and Luxembourg, and sacked them before the next qualifying campaign. When did they top the group? They certainly qualified for the Euros in spectacular style. What I'm saying is that it is possible for a team to sort of... This team, I think, has been through some very difficult times over the last year. It's been a freak. That's the first time they've played in front of a crowd. They got booed. They got booed by some of the supporters, which I just found amazing.
So I'm saying that. So
what's the point? What's the point of pulling the plug on this? What's the point of pulling the plug on this? We've got a bad team, but we can see that it's becoming a new team. You know,
I'm not saying pull the plug. Again, you're responding to points that no one in this conversation is making. And you're battling.
I've still got the memory. I've still got the memory of Murph flitting around in my head. I'm sorry. He's been hovering over
emotions. Emotions were high coming into this one, Richie. You'll understand when you listen back later on. But make your point, please. Yeah.
But it's like so. Give Stephen the job to see out the end of the tournament, because of course it matters if we win our next four games as opposed to losing our next four games. That is details that will be relevant in the conversation next summer as to where we go from here. But framing it as, remember the mistakes O'Neill made regarding, you know, Rice. Remember how Trapattoni ignored Wes. Remember how kind of ugly sometimes it was under Mick. They're not arguments in favour of Stephen. They're just arguments against the people we used to have. And like Damien said, if you like what Stephen is bringing to the table, and describe it in any way you want. I like the way he plays young players. I like the way he talks about the way the game should be played. I like the way he sets up. You can very quickly find someone else who coaches the game of football in the way that Stephen does. But also, you think, well, maybe, like the principle that has been well established in football since day one, a different manager can get different responses and results from the same group of players. It's the basis for managerial change.
Well, you know, at least he's going to be handing this, whoever does follow him in the job, at least he's going to be handing them some players, unlike maybe some of his predecessors.
Again, you're mocking predecessors, but that's not a pro Stephen Kenny position.
It's a pro Stephen Kenny position, because I'm saying maybe we're failing, but at least we're failing differently, failing better.
The only way to do this, right, is because we're watching games, we're waking up the day after, and there's these emotional discussions that's really centered around the 90 minutes it's just been. He deserves to see out the campaign, and then everybody deserves to take a step back, take a deep breath, and lay it all out on the table. Right. And then we can say, with a full picture of a qualifying campaign, has there been enough progress? Did Stephen do a good job? And then we decide, yes, there's a little bit of progress here. Look at Michael O'Neill. We're willing to go into the Nations League next year or even the next qualifying campaign. And we think he's done enough to earn it. But like, you don't kill the man now because he's tried to make changes and hasn't been as quick as everybody wanted. You know, we need to get behind the team, get behind Stephen, and judge him at the end of the campaign and stop having these polar discussions, because everybody can throw out arguments for their side insofar as, you know, results under Trapattoni or Michael O'Neill's position. He didn't win in his first 20 games or whatever the stat is. You know, I mean, it's not pretty to watch. I'm sure Stephen is learning on the job. And I'm sure that he will make progress. I'm pretty sure that him and his coaching staff are self-critical and they must look at it. But these polarizing extremes just aren't healthy.
Basically, what we're saying, Ken, you're the problem.
No. You need to listen. You need to listen back to what happened earlier. I'm just a little bit fired up. Just some people think it's okay to boo 20-year-olds doing their best for their country.
Was that, Ken, I wasn't at the game, but was that aimed at the players, or was that not at the referee? Or, I mean, are we sure?
I think it was just
that
people thought it was a, people thought it had been a poor performance, I think.
But I mean, surely the second half, I don't think so. I heard a couple of blues, but I'm not sure if that was aimed at a referee or an opposition player or the time wasting. I know the goalkeeper was messing around, so I'm not sure if that was aimed at that. Without being live at the stadium, I don't know.
But I think, to be honest, it's very hard for us to say with certainty what was the reasons for boos. But let's allow the possibility some of the boos were aimed at, or was an expression by fans of their displeasure, or, you know, you could describe it as harsher than that, at what they had just seen. Maybe it was a statement of whether they think the manager should be there or not. If it was, well, then it's representative, because you don't have to go too far in any discussion about Irish football with any fan you meet in the street or mates who care about the game. Someone will express that view. So if it is people booing because they want change, well, that's not hard to believe that that's the case, because I know loads of people who are calling for that change.
Okay, guys, before we wrap things up, I'm willing to take Ken's premise on board here for this final question, because normally I might ask for a prediction. What's the result going to be tomorrow night? But instead, Richie, I'm going to ask, what is the performance going to be like tomorrow night? Or more to the point, what do you want to see, regardless of what the scoreboard tells us? It tells all the scoreboard journalists, as Ken called us earlier on. What would you like to see tomorrow night?
Is it too easy to say I would love a win?
I literally just told you can't pick a...
The power of a win in any circumstances with any performance would give us something we haven't seen before, which is a team that can eke out a result. So if you're not allowing any discussion on a result, a clean sheet would be great. If we look really competitive and bright in large spells of the game, not just in little pockets like we saw maybe in the first half, opening section on the Saturday or the opening part of the second half, and that we see a little bit more. Again, I don't know how much we can expect from say Adam Eda. He's a really good game against Portugal. He was decent on Saturday. Again, I could be asking for a lot for a player of his age and inexperience and all that to deliver again. So I would just like to see, I'd like to hear the final whistle and just feel like, okay, we can breathe out here a little bit. We can take our fingers away from the panic button, and we can lower our voices a little bit and feel a little bit more relaxed, because do you know what? That was all right. Now, that's way too vague an answer for probably what you're looking for, but it is, like Dame said, it's really emotional these days in Ireland. We all feel really, like, these big questions. It's an existential issue on the table every time we see Ireland play at the moment, and I'd love for Wednesday morning to be waking up going, do you know what? I think we could be okay.
Damien?
I'd like to feel a sense of pride after the final whistle. I'd like to see an implementation of a game plan that allows us to lay a glove or to perhaps get some goals against Serbia, because Serbia are an extremely attacking team. We're an extremely good team at soaking up pressure. And we proved against Portugal that we can lay a glove on top opposition. I don't think that Serbia is strong defensively as what Portugal are. So I do think there should be opportunities for us to get goals. I'll probably try not to be as vague as Richie, but I would just like to feel, I'm probably going to be, but I probably just want to feel a sense of pride on Wednesday morning when I wake up that we had a good game.
Now, it's been an emotive day. We got a good bit of tactics in, and now we're back to emotion. So we'll finish on that. Damien, Richie, lovely stuff. Let's hope we all feel proud and happy and relieved on Wednesday morning. Thanks a million. Great stuff.
Yo, I'm getting ready to put y'all up on something, man. Yo, put some respect. Put some respect on my name. I've won five World Cups.
It's personal between me and I'm going to do you some serious harm, you big stiff idiot.
Okay, all right.
Who are the people who are going to get together and go, ugh?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, yo.
Are Kante and Rüdiger going to be like, ugh? As for Laqueta and Jorginho, like, ugh. Little pack of alpha dogs, like, ugh. Is Mason Mount the senior man?
My people like, yo, nitro, 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 nitro,
like, ugh. Ugh. Who's it? Who've we got here? You know, ugh. Ugh. He thinks he's the dogs. Ugh. Ugh. He thinks he's all that. Ugh. Ugh.
We're live on Channel 5. Alright, go on, one more. Whoa. Also, they're gonna need 10 plumbers to do you when I've got to finish with you. Also, you are getting it.
Alright, I see Murph is in my waiting room again. Come back in, Kieran, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. You were talked about a little bit there. While you were nothing too bad.
Oh,
worry.
that's
your name. Your name just came up in conversation. How are you, Ken?
Yeah, I'm great, yeah, I'm good. Well, you know what I have? I have the pleasure of knowing, of sleeping, of going to sleep at night knowing that I'm not the sort of person who boos 20-year-olds trying to do their best for their country.
Oh, God. I thought we could maybe make up at the end of the podcast here, but it doesn't sound like it.
So. I haven't heard Damien and Richie. Did Ken try and gaslight them too, did he?
All right, guys. All right. Take this off air, okay? we'll wrap things up. You know what? That got
you
so...
You what, fam?
I'll give that it That got so intense earlier on that you knocked me out of my stride. I forgot to promote the World Service.
I was knocked out of my stride as well. It was like, I was like, I'm not used to arguing with points of view this basic. This is, I'm like the... I'm like the sort of sophisticated, you know, Mascherano PK Barcelona defense suddenly faced with like some kind of a Dixie Dean wrecking ball center forward from the 1930s.
So are you including Richie and Damien as the Dixie Dean types?
There's a guy in massive canvas pantaloons kicking me up the arse and leaving Dublin stains.
It's gas because, like, all of the things that I said were wrong with the Irish performance, I actually just reread in Ken's report of the game in the Irish Times.
This is the thing that annoyed me, because I didn't come on here to like give some
could have fooled me
defensive. Yeah, but what did I? This is what ends up in the toxic discourse that we have and that we're incubating, that we both reflect and incubate and reproduce.
No, I'll let you talk.
Because what I want more than anything is to be able to talk about Stephen Kenny's Ireland as though it's like a normal situation, rather than having to, like, the thing that annoyed me earlier was you saying it's okay to boo all you like.
I don't think Murph said it's okay to boo.
I really did not say
Murph
that.
Murph said, and I quote, these people are entitled to better. They're entitled to boo. As Republic of Ireland supporters, we are entitled to a better team than the one we've been given by this man, Stephen Kenny. That's a direct quote. If you want to go back and listen to what he said.
Run the tape.
Sounds like somebody found a couple of minutes to do that in between Zoom calls.
I wanted to come on and criticize the performance as I normally would have, and ended up being forced to defend it in an emotional way by this crass and ignorant attack. You know what I mean? When you're faced with that, suddenly it's like, well, hang on a second. You know, okay. I wanted to point out the lack of tactical joint up thinking. I thought we'd have a little bout of head scratching over how James McLean ended up on the ball, ended up having 102 touches, right? that can't be good. But instead, I ended up having to defend it, like, the very. See, this is the problem. This is why can't things just be normal? That's what I want now. And you're asking them what they wanted to say. Yeah. What I want is, I just want a normal team again. You know, I just want a normal team, a normal situation. Is that too much to ask for, Owen?
You are landing some late shots here, Ken. I'm afraid the final bell sounded. Yeah, this is all after the bell stuff. It's quite filthy, I must say, actually, these late blows that you're landing at a defenseless Murph there.
You might say defenseless. I've just given up at this stage. I mean, there's no talking to this man. I mean, the misattribution of quotes... every journalistic trick in the book. But it's fine. I've taken the high road. You're down below me on the low road, and that's fine.
If there are people who think that I'm trying to gaslight them, you know, as you say, I encourage you to read my article in the Irish Times, which analyzes the title is Ireland supporters must be patient with Stephen Kenny's team. but I just looked
honestly,
at it.
Honestly, I read that this morning. I was like, oh, we're in for a long morning this morning. All right.
I just looked at it, and what I have to say is. I don't usually read the comments, right? I'm not a comment reader, you know what I mean? But I did notice that one of the comments underneath said, "The bizarre defense of Kenny continues. Hard to know how badly we need to continuously play before some in the media stop defending him." And literally the entire article is like criticizing Stephen Kenny. Like, it's basically saying, it's criticizing the thing, saying, you know, I think this was wrong. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. At the end of the day, though, there's no point in going boo, boo, and like kicking it all out, because like, this is where we are. We've got to try and put together a competitive team, and you're not going to get it just by saying, okay, well, this is a, is anyone even still listening to me? Owen, have you shut down this? Owen, are you still there?
Ken, you know, I put down these little notes for myself, you know, after the piece, and I have here promo World Service !! Because I forgot to do it earlier. I said, I'm going to come in, I'm going to do that, then wrap the show. And yet I've been, my plans have been waylaid again. So everybody, sign up to the Second Captain's World Service, okay? For more of this. That's it done. Secondcaptains.com. Fiverr a month plus VAT. Yes, I am still listening, by the way. I've been absolutely riveted from the very first, from the very opening bell of the bout.
They can't stop defending him. I'm looking at the comments here. This is always a mistake. They can't stop defending him because they are the people who called for this change, says Jeremy, who presumably wanted Mick McCarthy to stay on. We couldn't afford Mick McCarthy, Jeremy. He got £1 million bonus on top of all the cash he got paid to finish third in that group. Now we must stick with the manager because he changed tactics. It's always the tactics or the stats with Ken, never the result. Literally, I'm criticizing the manager. I'm saying this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. But it just... I suppose the headline does say you must be patient.
You have the choice to just kick him out of the Zoom meeting. Like, you can just do it, Owen. You can just do it right now.
Is it possible, Killian, to fade one of these audio files out? Just slowly fade Ken as I continue to talk.
I'll never be silenced. You can't silence me. I will keep defending him. I'll defend him to the end. I've always belonged to him.
Thanks, Ciarán. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, you. Thanks
for this, Ciarán.
Thank you again.
I think we're previewing the All-Ireland football final tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about the Meath women's team on the mini podcast today. But listen, enjoy the rest of your day. Chat to you later. Bye.
What one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. Those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.